Today's Daf in Sanhedrin is Chaf Gimel. We are starting the new perek of the Masechta. After the Masechta gave us a basic rundown in the first perek of how many judges are needed for each of the different cases that come up in the areas of Halacha, the second perek then went on to describe the king and the Kohen Gadol as it relates to his involvement in the judicial process. Now we go back to a comment that was made in the beginning of the Masechta, and that is the number of judges required in a monetary case. The Mishnah starts off on the top of the Amud Dinim Amudus B'Shlosha, that when it comes to monetary law, so it is going to be tried in front of a court of three. And then the Mishnah goes on to provide a process in which we're going to be selecting the court made up of three. What we're going to be doing right now is reading the Mishnah in the manner in which the Gemara assumes the Mishnah intends. Zeber lo echad v'zeber lo echad. Each one is going to be choosing a court, meaning that obviously in a monetary case is going to be made up of two litigants. Each litigant is going to be selecting its court. So one is going to be selecting one court and the other is going to be selecting a second court. Ushnehem borlem od echad. And then what's going to be happening is that the two litigants are going to be then choosing a third court. Divrei Rabbi Meir, this is the opinion of Rabbi Meir. If you take a look at the first Rashi of the Mishnah. So Rashi writes, Mashma zebra lo beit anecha v'shehen gimel v'zeh echad haray shisha v'shnein barim lamod echad haray tes. So the way I just presented the Mishnah is that each litigant is going to be choosing a court. Each court is made up of three. So that means that with the selection of a court by each litigant, with the third court also being selected by the litigant, so now you have a total of nine judges. Nine judges, that's obviously more than what we need. And that's what Rashi says. We're going to see the Gemara. The very first question the Gemara is going to ask is, I don't understand, you only need three. And in the process in which we are suggesting right now, we have nine. That's six more than what we need. So that's going to prompt the Gemara's first question. Back to the Mishnah. The Mishnah presents the opinion of v'chachamim v'chachamim amorim shnei dayanim barim lam od echad. The chachamim say, in terms of the selection of the third court, so it's going to be the judges themselves who are going to be selecting the third court, not the litigants. The Mishnah then goes on. According to Reb Meir, I can disqualify, I meaning one of the litigants, can disqualify the other litigant's judge, and the other litigant can disqualify my judge. And the Chachamim say, when is that true? That's only when you bring a proof that they're either related or they are objectively disqualified, legally disqualified. But if they're either kosher or they are certified from another Beis Din, so then you do not have the right to disqualify them. Rameir's opinion is that I can disqualify the other litigant's witnesses, and he in turn can disqualify my witnesses. The Chachamim say, when would that be so? That's only if you bring a proof that they're either related or they are disqualified. But if they are kosher, so then you do not have the right to disqualify them. Ad kan divrei Mishnah, that is where the Mishnah comes to a conclusion. And we can ask a number of very, very basic questions, even before we start with the Gemara. First off, in terms of the process in selecting a court for a monetary case, so the Mishnah introduces us to this idea where we're going to be selecting. What is referred to in Halacha, and we're going to be referring it to the rest of this year today, as Zavla. Zavla is an acronym, Zayin Beis Lamed Aleph, for Zeber Lo Echad. Each one is going to be selecting. So first and foremost, is the most basic question we can ask is, why are we going through a process of Zeber Lo Echad, of choosing a judge or choosing a court? Meaning, wouldn't it just simply be the case that we have a dispute and we need to litigate the case and we'll go to a court that's already established, meaning that the town already has a court that's established? The Torah, in fact, has a mitzvah where we're supposed to set up bati dinim. We're supposed to set up courts, and we're just simply going to go to the court that's in town. And the Mishnah over here is talking about a process of Zavla. So the easiest way to address this is just simply say that what our Mishnah is proposing is that in the event that we don't agree to a court to go to, so then we're going to use this process, this method of Zavla. That's perhaps the easiest way to suggest when when we're using this method that the Mishnah proposes. Later in this year, we could suggest that maybe Zavla is preferred. We're going to go over that a little bit later on. The other basic issue that comes up in the Mishnah is the opinion of Rav Meir. Rav Meir takes a position where, in terms of the selection of the third court, fine, you'll have the litigants themselves being involved in the process of selection of the third court. But in terms of the disqualification of the judges and disqualification of the witnesses, Rav Meir's position is very difficult to understand, meaning that in the disqualification of the judges, Rav Meir takes the position that I don't need an objective reason to disqualify the other person's judge. I just feel that I don't feel he's not appropriate for our case, so I can disqualify him. So for a mayor, that's a lot of power given to the litigants. And how are we going to proceed further in the case if I have the right and the power to disqualify the other litigant's judge? Furthermore, Ramirez's position is even further difficult to understand when it comes to witnesses, because Ramirez says in the Mishnah that I can disqualify your witnesses even if I don't have an objective reason as to why they should be disqualified, but I can disqualify your witnesses. That's also equally, if not more, difficult to understand. Obviously, your witnesses are testifying against me, and the idea that I could just simply disqualify them because I don't like them, I mean, by definition, I'm not going to like them because they're testifying about me. So it's a really difficult position to understand. And a good part of today's daf and tomorrow's daf is going to be an attempt to understand Ramir's position regarding disqualification of the witnesses and the disqualification of judges as well. Okay, with that stated, we are looking at the Gemara. We're beginning with the Gemara, Mai Zebar Lo Echad, Zebar Lo Echad, B'tlat Asadi. So we already know what the Gemara's first question is, as we already previewed it with Rashi, and that is that when the Mishnah says that I choose one and you choose one, at this point in time, we're thinking that we're talking about the selection of courts, which means that I'll choose a Beis Din of three and you'll choose a Beis Din of three, and then we'll either we or the courts themselves will choose a Beis Din of three, and that gets us to nine. But the Gemara says, B'tlat Asadi, but you only need three. So then that obviously is a lot more than what we need. Hachi kamar. So the Gemara proposes now, this is a pshat in our Mishnah. Kishe zebra lo beis din echad, zebra lo beis din echad. When each one chooses a court, I choose one court and you don't agree, and you choose a different court. So now, shnei barim lam od echad. So now what we're going to have to do is we're going to have to decide on a third court. So according to Rav Meir, we're going to decide on a third court, and according to the Chachamim, the courts that were disqualified are going to be responsible for choosing a third court. Now, we can, at this point in time, pause and ask again a simple question. According to Rav Meir, if we can't agree the first time, how are we going to agree the second time? Okay. And according to the Chachamim, also, it's difficult because after the courts have been disqualified, we're now asking the courts, we know we didn't want you, we know we couldn't agree to you, but could you now go ahead and select another court for us? Okay. It's difficult to understand how a court, after being disqualified, will now turn around and just simply choose another court. But in any event, this is what the Gemara now is proposing as a way to understand the Mishnah. So the Gemara now, at this point in time, is going to pause in the understanding of the Mishnah and basically reflect on the following. We're basically saying that in a monetary case, so it's going to be tried in front of three, and the Mishnah is dealing with a scenario in which we're not agreeing on which court to go to. Now, involved, included in monetary cases, are loans. Now, in a loan, you obviously have a lender and you have a borrower. Now, generally speaking, in the relationship between a lender and a borrower, and we discussed this back in Baba Basra, so we said that the lender is the one who's extending himself. He's the one who is giving money, right? He's giving a interest-free loan to his friend. And so, therefore, he's putting himself out. And as we pointed out back in Baba Basra, and we're saying it again right now, generally speaking, the way that the Torah and the Chachamim view the relationship between a lender and a borrower is that basically the lender is in the driver's seat, meaning the lender is the one who extended himself, and so therefore now going forward, so the lender is going to be in the driver's seat. In fact, the Gemara quoted earlier the Pasuk that the way the borrower is viewed at is basically he's like a slave to the lender. So that's the way that the Torah and the Chachamim view the relationship. So now let's consider that if we're talking about a monetary case, we're talking about a loan. Right. In other words, it includes the case of a loan. And in the case of a loan, I have a lender and a borrower. And are we really now suggesting that the borrower can dictate the terms of which court that he wants to go to? Meaning that the lender says we're going to go to this court, and the borrower says we're going to go to that court. And do you really think that the borrower has a right to dictate which court he's going to go to? And that's exactly what the Gemara is now asking. You really mean to tell me that the borrower can say, no, I don't want to go to this court, but rather I want to go to a different court? This is true only regarding a malva. The Gemara is quoting over here from a different Gemara coming up later on, a question of traveling. Who has to travel to whom? The borrower's in one town, the lender's in another town. They can't agree. They need litigation. So who goes to whom? So the Rav Elazar's comment over there is that it is in the case of the where the lender wants it to be tried in a particular town, that's fine. But if the lova is insistent that the case is going to be tried in his town, so we say to the lova, nope. You come to the lender, and you go to where the lender wants the case to be tried, because you are the borrower. And again, it goes back to the understanding of the relationship between a borrower and the lender. Lender's in the driver's seat, and the borrower is more subservient to that of the lender. So the Gemara right now is just struggling to understand how could it possibly be that in our Mishnah, which is monetary cases, which includes a borrower and a lender, how could it possibly be that the borrower is dictating where the case is actually going to take place and in front of which court is it going to be taking place of? So the Gemara is going to give a couple of answers to explain how can the borrower ever voice an opinion in terms of which court to go to. So number one, the Gemara says, Kedama Rav Yochanan Ber Kosher Besur Yishanu, Hachanami Ber Kosher Besur Yishanu. Rav Yochanan elsewhere gave an answer where we're talking about courts that are not so knowledgeable. They're not certified courts. They're not mumchim. The Rashi describes them as lo hayu bikim b'din Torah. So they weren't experts. So in other words, so if we decide, if the lender's insistent that we go to a court, but not a certified court, not one made up of musmachim, but rather a court that's just made up of a nice bunch of gentlemen, but are really not proficient in the halachas, so then under those circumstances, the bar can demur, and he can say, no, we're not going to go to that court, we're going to go to a different court. But if the court is made up of certified experts, so then under those circumstances, the bar does not have a right to dictate where the case is going to take place. That's one proposal of the Gemara. Gemara gives another answer of Papa Amar Filotema Mumchim. We can even say that the two courts are certified courts, and the borrower is insisting we go to a different court. And the question again is, how can the bar dictate such terms? The Gemara's answer is Kigon Beidina de Rav Huna Rav Chista. We're talking about the Beis Din of Rav Huna Rav Chista to Kamar Le Mikam Tranalach, where the bar now says to the lender, look, I'm not really imposing on you, meaning that I don't want to go to your court, I want to go to my court, and it happens to be that my court's in town. And so under those circumstances, the bar can also once again dictate the terms and say that he wants to go to his court. Tosas over here is bothered by a simple question. How do we have a scenario in which you have two courts opened up in the same town, specifically Rav Huna and Rav Chista? Rav Chista was a Talmud of Rav Huna, so how could he be opening up a court in the same town? See Tosfos for a very brief discussion on that point. Anyway, we go back to the Gemara, and we are back in the flow of the Gemara regarding the selection of the court. At this point in time, we are proposing that we have two litigants, and they're not agreeing to which court to go to. And the way the Gemara sets up the Mishnah now is that one litigant is choosing one court, another litigant is choosing another court. Obviously, we can't agree. So therefore, we're going to go now to a third court. Who's selected by whom? So that's the machlokus in the Mishnah between the Chachamim and Remer. Chachamim say it's going to be selected by the judges, and Remer says it's going to be selected by the litigants. The Gemara now goes back, and the Gemara is going to sit on this pshat and ask the following questions. Number one, V'chachamim omer shnei dayanim barun lamod echad. If you think now that we're talking about Beis Din, which is what we're proposed, so Beis Din basa depasu lahu azlu ubiru lahu beidina achrina. So the Gemara says, quite frankly, it is difficult to understand how after Beis Din is rejected, they are now expected to select another Beis Din. That seems slightly unfair. It seems to go run counter, a general human inclination that after you're rejected, you now are going to select someone to take your place. Number two says, "Gamar vo, and my zebra loecha v'zebra loecha." How did you understand the Mishnah? And the way Rashi understands the second question of the Gemara is that the way Mishnah presents it is that this is what we're going to be doing every single time. What do you mean this is what we're going to be doing every single time? Every single time there's litigation, we're going to fight over which court to go to? Now, I know for the more cynical ones amongst us, the answer is going to be yes. We're going to fight about which court to go to. But, of course, that doesn't have to be, meaning if we have litigation, we need to go to court, and the court in town is an accepted court, and people like it, so we're going to go to the court. It sounds like from the Mishnah that no, this is what we're going to be doing every single time. We're going to be fighting over which court to go to. And therefore, we're going to have to go to a third court. The Gemara is basically saying, it doesn't seem like this is going to be the case every single time. So, Ela Hachikamer. So the Gemara now arrives at its breakthrough understanding of the Mishnah, and that is that the Mishnah is not talking about courts, but rather the Mishnah is talking about a single judge. And this is what the Mishnah means. Kisha zebor lo dayanecha, zebor lo dayanecha. When one chooses one judge and another chooses another judge, so shnei bar lem odachad, now we're going to be choosing a third judge. So basically now, the way we're understanding the Mishnah is that we're actually constructing a court. It's not that I'm choosing a court and you're choosing a court and we can't agree which court to go to, but actually what we're doing is we're putting a court together where I'm going to choose my judge and you're going to choose your judge, and then a third judge will be chosen. Who's going to choose a third judge? That's the machlokus, the Mishnah between Rav Meir and the Chachamim, where according to Rav Meir, it's going to be chosen by the litigants, and according to the Chachamim, it will be chosen by the judges themselves. So the Gemara says this is the understanding of the Mishnah. So the Gemara goes on to explain. So, Maishna Dabdi Hachi, why would we do this? What's the benefit of doing this? So, Amri ben Marav, Mishmei de Rebbe Zer, Mitoch Shezebar lo Dainecha, Vezebar lo Dainecha, Shnei Bar Mlamorachad, Yasa Adilamito. So the Gemara says, by doing this process where each one's choosing a judge, and then we're going to be choosing a third judge, so now the case will come out, and more truth will come as a result of this case. Okay. So the Gemara concludes that it's a better way to do it. Now, exactly what the Gemara means by this, so let's take a look at Rashi. Rashi says, Yatsa din la misa, I'm reading the Rashi inside, Ditsaisa baladinim, that the litigants themselves now are going to be listening to the ruling of the case, meaning that they will accept what the judge's conclusion are. Desavra chayev, because the one who was found guilty will say, Hare ani batzmi berati ha'echad. I chose one of the judges, and if he could argue on my behalf, he would have done so. And as far as the judges are concerned, they're going to be more comfortable arguing on behalf of both of them, because they were both selected. The way Rashi presents the Gemara over here, what it sounds like from Rashi, is that basically these judges are going to be advocating on behalf of the litigant who chose them. Of course, the difficulty with this Rashi is that as a judge, you're not supposed to be advocating for one litigant over another litigant. What you're supposed to do is you're supposed to hear the case, find out the details of the case, and based on the halacha, come to a conclusion in terms of what the din would be. But the idea that you're advocating on one over the other, so in our modern legal system, we call that an attorney. We call that a representative. So I'm going to hire somebody who's going to represent me in court because he knows the law much better than I do, and he'll represent me in the best way possible. So that's an attorney. That's a lawyer. But we are not talking about lawyers over here. And I'm sure we're talking about judges. We're the ones who are talking about the people arriving at the decision. So from Rashi's perspective, it does seem extraordinarily strange where Rashi is describing these judges in a manner of what we would call attorneys. In fact, if you take a look at the Rashi right here on our Gemara. So the Rush actually writes that many people read Rashi and arrived at the conclusion that if you're using the process of Zebra Loachet, of Zavla, so then the judges who were chosen can actually serve more like attorneys than they could like judges. That's, and the Rush says, and that's not what Rashi meant, and don't think for a second that Rashi is actually advocating that. That's the Rush describes as being Ivas Adin, that's a perversion of justice, that's not justice. So much discussion about this Rashi. If you take a look at Tosas over here, The third Tosfos on the Amud also discussing this question of what is Zavla accomplishing. So Tosfos gives two pshatim. The first pshat that Tosfos gives, very similar to Rashi, that that by using the process of Zavla, so then the litigants are going to be more open to whatever the decision is going to be. Even the one who's found guilty is going to accept the decision. But then Tosfos points out last 5 lines of the Tosfos, last 6 lines, Lefum riata mashma kacha perish. But Tosfos says, but I'll tell you what. He says, if you read the Gemara simply, I think the pshat in the Gemara basically goes like this. Shemitok shibiru zeshalov zeshalov shlishi. Basically, what's going to happen if you use the process of Zavla is you're going to get a balanced court. Meaning that what's going to happen is that one judge was chosen by one litigant, another judge was chosen by another litigant. Each of the judges now is going to be arguing for the one who chose, the one that was chosen. Again, not like an attorney, not like a representative, but just simply, in other words, listening intently to the to each of their litigant side. And now they're going to go into the deliberation with each one their own perspective. And then you're going to have a third judge who's going to basically balance out those two judges. And by doing so, you're going to arrive at something closer to the truth. So Tosfos says that actually this process of Zavla will get you closer to the truth, as it is a more balanced view of each side of the case. It could very well be now, as we go back to the question that we raised in the very beginning of this year, this process of Zavla, is this a process that we prefer? Is it something that should be done? Should there be an established court in the city, or should we just simply run to the process of Zavla? So it could very well be that that question is going to be dependent on the Gemara's conclusion over here and the two ways to understand the Gemara's conclusion. Meaning, like Rashi says, and like the first Pshat and Tosfos says, if this is just a question of perception and that this is going to create a better perceived ruling, but in terms of the actual objectivity of the ruling itself, and in terms of the quality of the ruling, it doesn't really change anything. So then you can make the argument that this is not really the preferred system. This is just a system put in place when I have litigants who are just simply so at odds with one another. They can't agree in a court, so we're going to use this process as a method of appeasement. But it's not really creating any kind of better objective truth and better conclusion. On the other hand, if you go with Tosfos' second shot, that this actually creates more emes and more truth, so then you can make the argument that this is actually a preferred method, and that this is going to be the method that's employed a priori, and not just as a backup system in the event that the litigants cannot agree with one another. Okay, we are now back in the Gemara of Chacham Amomrim. We are now moving on to the Gemara, looking at the three machloksim in the Mishnah in terms of the construction of a court of three. So we are looking right now in terms of who's selecting the third judge. So the Chachamim say that it will be the two judges selecting the third judge, and according to Rav Meir, it's going to be the two litigants selecting the third judge. The Gemara quotes in the name of Rav that if you're asked to sign on a document, you should not sign on a document unless you know who's going to be signing together with you. And Rav Meir lay slay the Rav Yehuda Merav, and Rabban is slay the Rav Yehuda Merav. And now the Gemara is suggesting that this machlok between the Chacham and Rav Meir is whether or not we do or do not subscribe to the opinion of Rav. Meaning that according to the Chachamim, I cannot expect judges to preside over a case when they don't know who the third judge is going to be. Therefore, they are given the prerogative of choosing the third judge. As opposed to Rav Meir doesn't subscribe to this rule. Rav Meir says that basically we're going to stick the judges with whomever we're going to stick them with, and so therefore we're going to allow the litigants to choose the third judge. The Gemara says, law. Gemara says, no, this is not the machlokas between Rav Meir and the Chacham. Dekuli Amma Isluhu de Rav Yehuda Merav. Everyone agrees to Rav Yehuda Merav. V'dafei Adayanim Kuli Amma Lo Pligi de Be'inan. Everyone agrees that, as far as the selection of the third judge, so it becomes critical for the other two judges to be involved in the selection of the third judge. Ki pligi das balei dinim. The only question now is do I also need the litigants involved in the selection of the third judge? Rameir sever das balei dinim nami binim. Rameir says that I also need the litigants involved in the selection of the third judge. Whereas according to the Chachamim, no, I only need the judges to be there involved in selecting the third judge, but not the litigants. Gufa, the Gemara goes back to the statement. The Gemara is going to quote a brisa supporting this idea that when you're involved with other people, you should know first who those other people are going to be. This is how those who were literally of clean mind Yerushalayim, speaking of people who held themselves to a higher standard in Yerushalayim, they wouldn't sign on a document unless they knew who else was going to sign with them. They wouldn't sit on the bench unless they knew who else was sitting on the bench together with them. And they wouldn't be sitting at a meal unless they knew who else was at the meal together with them. Ze posel dayano. Continuing now in the Gemara, and the Gemara is discussing the disqualification of the judges. So again, in our Mishnah, we have a machlokes between Rameir and the Chachamim, where Rameir says that one litigant can disqualify the judge of the other litigant. And the Chachamim says no, unless there is some objective disqualification, either they're related or an objective disqualification, which later in the parable we're going to learn exactly what are the parameters of objective disqualification, but otherwise, of course, a litigant cannot disqualify the judge of the other litigant. And the Gemara here is bothered by Rameir's position, as it is very difficult to understand. Is it really within the power of the litigant to disqualify the judge of the other litigant? So the Gemara here uses the answer of Yochanan that we already used once earlier in the Daf, and that is that you're right. If it's a certified judge, if it's a mumcha, so then of course a litigant can't disqualify such a judge. But if the judge in question over here is not a bucky, he's not an expert. In other words, he's a guy who knows basic halachas and basic business, but he's not an expert. So under those circumstances, so then yes. So then it would be within the power of a litigant to disqualify that judge for this particular case. So the Gemara says, so which the Gemara says, well, look at the opinion of the Chachamim. Chachamim say you can only disqualify only if it's a Karov or if it's a Pasul. Otherwise, you can't. Now, if you contrast Rameir's position to that, what does Rameir sound like? Rameir sounds like you can disqualify even if they're not an expert. Even if they are an expert, you can disqualify them. So the Gemara says, so that's now the way it seems like Rameir's position is being laid out. Which again brings us back to our original question. Well, how can you do that? How can you disqualify a judge who's an expert? So hachi kamar. So the Gemara says no. That's not the way to understand the Mishnah. No, what the Chachamim mean is that if the person is kasher, meaning he's not an expert, but he's a good guy. Good guy simply meaning that, you know, there's nothing objectively wrong with him, aside from the fact that he does not have proficiency. But in other words, he's a good guy. So under those circumstances, we're going to treat him like a mumcha. In that, now, he will preside over the case, and you cannot disqualify him. And whereas according to Rameir says no, that as long as he's not a mumcha, so then you have the right to disqualify him. Tashma. The Gemara brings in a brisa. The brisa over here brings dialogue between the Chachamim and Rabbi Meir. And the Chachamim say to Rameir, like, we don't understand your position. How can you disqualify somebody who is a mumcha, who has expertise and is certified? So clearly from this brisa, the way the Chachamim are understanding Rameir is that you have the right to disqualify him even if the judge is a mumcha. So the Gemara again deflects. Ema, local emanish apostle dain shihim chuhu rabim aleihem. No. What's meant over here is that we're talking about a judge not who is certified and not who is a mumcha, but is accepted. is accepted by the masses, and in that regard, he could stand as a judge, but not because he's a mumcha. So under those circumstances, so again, the Chachamim would say that you can't disqualify him, and Rameir says that you would be able to disqualify him, but again, what the Gemara now is arguing is that if he's actually a mumcha, even Rameir says that you cannot disqualify him. Tanya Namihach, the Gemara quotes a brisa supporting this as well. La'olam posav ha'olechad shikaba la bezen shem mumcha le'rabim divrei Meir. Rameir in the brisa over here says that you can keep disqualifying judges until you get to the point where you get somebody who's a mumcha. Once you get to somebody who's a mumcha, so then you can't disqualify him. Okay, so ad kan. So now, in terms of the disqualification of the judges, so the Gemara now has certainly a better understanding of the machlok chin Rameir and the Chachamim, if the person's a mumcha. So we're all going to be in agreement that you can't disqualify such a judge. And the only thing left for the debate between Rameir and the Chachamim is if one of the litigants brings in a judge who is not a mumcha. So can you disqualify him? So Rameir says you can, and the Chachamim say you cannot. Okay, but now we get on to the last part of the Mishnah, which is obviously going to be the most difficult part of the Mishnah, and that is this idea of disqualification of witnesses. Now, when it comes to witnesses, there is no certificate for being a witness. Meaning, for being a witness, all you need to do is see an event and go to court and testify about it. Now, again, if you are a gambler, as we're going to learn later in the parak, if you're a thief, there are going to be things that obviously are going to disqualify you from serving as a witness. But other than that, though, you are either a good witness or you're no good. Either you're not a good witness. It's simply binary, meaning as opposed to judges where there are gradations. There's a certified judge. There's a non-certified judge. Okay, but over here, by witnesses, it's binary. It's either you're good or you're not good. So now we have to look back at the Mishnah and try to understand Rameir's position. Rameir says that you could disqualify witnesses. Gemara says, and the Chachamim say, no, you can only disqualify witnesses if there's something objectively wrong with them. Either they're related or they're objectively disqualified. Otherwise, you cannot disqualify witnesses. Which brings the Gemara now to ask the obvious question, and that is, how do we understand Rameir? V'ha edim k'mumchem dami. As far as witnesses are concerned, witnesses are like mumchem. They're like experts. Again, that's the point that we made just a moment ago, that with witnesses, it's either they're good or they're not good. But there's no gradations. The Amar Rameir zeposel edav shozeh zeposel edav shozeh. And Rameir says that I could disqualify one litigant is allowed to disqualify the witnesses of the other litigant. So it's really hard to understand. How can that be? So the Gemara now is going to give four different approaches to understand that according to Rameir, under certain circumstances, it would be okay to disqualify the witnesses. But now what the Gemara is going to be discussing is under what circumstances would it be okay to disqualify the other witnesses. So here we go now with the first answer of the Gemara. So I'm Reish Lakish Pekarach Yom HaDavar Zeh. So Reish Lakish, when hearing the opinion of Rameir, was almost like astounded. I couldn't believe it. Such a holy mouth would say such a thing? Meaning, the way we have Rameir in the Mishnah can't be. It can't be that Rameir says that you could disqualify witnesses. It simply doesn't make any sense. So, Tani Edo. So Reish Lakish says, now when we're learning the Mishnah, so I'm going to make one small editing change in the Mishnah, says Reish Lakish, and that is not the word Edo, but rather Edo, taking it from plural down to singular. Where it wasn't two judges who testified, but it was rather one judge who was, sorry, it wasn't two witnesses testifying, but rather it was one witness who was testifying. So the Gemara says, Eidol Amai. The Gemara says, well, one witness, what is one witness testifying about? Eilem Lamamon Rachman Apostle. One witness testifying about money, we know that you can't extract money one person from another unless it's done in front of two witnesses. So Eilish Shvua, and if we're talking about making the other litigant make a shvua, so he munim ahem nekabei trei. Well, we know that, yes, one witness can force the other litigant to make a shvua. But that is a Torah-given right, meaning that as it relates to shvua, one witness in the Torah is treated like two witnesses. And therefore, a shvua is going to be made. And here, if we're talking about where the witnesses, or I should say better, the witness is only inducing a shvua, well, that is a Torah idea. That's a Torah concept. And as a result of that, we're back to square one. Then I wouldn't be able to disqualify that one witness for a shvua. So the Gemara says, "Olam mamam." So no. So Gemara says, let's go back to our original proposal, which is that the one witness is there to extract money. Our question, which we asked, one witness is not good enough in order to extract money. In order to extract money, so you need two witnesses. So let's rechad the kabbalah like a betray. So the Gemara says that we're talking about a case where prior to the case, the two litigants sat down together and they made concessions one to another. In the next Mishnah, we're going to be learning together that under certain circumstances, you can have the litigants making concessions one to another and basically accepting things which normally are not accepted in a court of law, but they can sit down and they can make such concessions. It's basically connected to the idea of being mochel. In other words, instead of just simply forgiving altogether, basically what you're forgiving over here is some of the basic rules of the process. So the Gemara is saying that maybe over here in our Mishnah we're talking about a case where prior to the case there was concession made between the two litigants, where one litigant said to the other, "Look, I know you have one witness, and I know normally one witness is not going to be good enough, but I accept the in this particular case I'm going to accept one witness." And the Gemara now is telling us that this is now the machlokes between Rameir and the Chachamim, which is that after a concession is made, and now the case has started, would we give the right for the litigants to back away from such a case after having made such a concession? And the Gemara now is saying that according to the Chachamim, you cannot retract. Once you made the concession, it's going to be binding. And according to Rav Meir, no. Once you made the concession, you still have the right to back out. And the Gemara now is saying that this is the machlok between Rav Meir and the Chachamim. So the Gemara says, So the Gemara says, okay, so now, what is really the machlokus all about now on this particular issue? It's just simply a question of whether or not after making a concession you can retract. The Gemara says, Tanina. But the truth of the matter is that this is going to be discussed. In fact, this is the very next Mishnah coming up in our Perek about making a concession prior to the case beginning and the ability to retract from such a concession. The very next Mishnah has a case where I accept either my father to be a judge or your father to be a judge, or the three judges are going to be three herdsmen. So if we make such a concession, the halacha is that such a concession would be acceptable, and can we retract? So this is machlokes between Rameir and the Chachamim. Rameir says that you can retract, and the Chachamim say that you cannot retract. To which the Gemara says, now before the Gemara gives an answer, Ve'amr Rav Dimi Bereid Rav Nachman Bereid Rav Yosef Kigon Dekabel Eleh Bechad. In the case where we accept the dad as one of the judges, meaning dad is serving on the court with two other judges. So in other words, dad, together with two others, are going to be trying the case. Why did the Gemara have to introduce that point over here? Tosis on the top of the Amud discusses that. But in the meantime, however, we're just going to keep going with the flow of the Gemara. So right now, the Gemara is bothered by a simple question. And that is that if you make an editing change in our Mishnah, where our Mishnah is not talking about two witnesses, but rather it's talking about one witness, and the Mishnah's cases where a concession was made between the two litigants, where originally one witness was accepted to be good, and then over the duration of the case, so then the conceding litigant wants to back out from his concession. So can he back out, yes or no? Rameir says yes, and the Chachamim say no. And right now, what the Gemara is bothered by is that the Pshat in of itself is a fine Pshat in the Mishnah. It just, A, it requires an editing change of the Mishnah, and B, the next Mishnah discusses this very point. So why would I need two Mishnahs to speak to the same exact point? So the Gemara says, Tzricha. The Gemara says, no, it's really necessary, meaning that let's assume that we are right in the way we understood our Mishnah, and I still need both our Mishnah and the upcoming Mishnah. Why? You see, in the case where the next Mishnah, where we accept one of our fathers as one of the judges, so there's nothing objectively wrong with dad. In fact, in other cases, he would be qualified. It just happens to be that in our case, he's disqualified. So I might have thought that in such a case, but in our Mishnah, where we're saying that the concession was accepting one witness like two witnesses, where one witness can never extract money. So ema mode lele Rav Meir. So I might have thought that the Chachamim would agree to Rav Meir, that in our Mishnah, if you made such a concession, and it's a major concession to allow one witness to extract money from one party to another. So maybe the Chachamim would say, like to Rav Meir, that in this case I'd agree with you. So that's why I need our Mishnah. And conversely, if all I had was our Mishnah, well, in the next Mishnah, when talking about using dad as one of the judges, it's not a major concession, it's a minor concession. Consider that dad in other cases would be serving well as a judge, and also consider, like the Gemara said on the top of the Amud, where there were two other valid judges also in this case. So it's not a major concession, it's a minor concession. And I might have thought that Rav Meir, under a minor concession, would not be able to retract. Tzricha. So the Gemara says that's why both cases are necessary. So right now the Gemara has defended the first approach of Reish Lakish in terms of understanding our Mishnah. Question: how can I disqualify the other litigants' witnesses? It seems absurd. So the first approach of the Gemara of Reish Lakish is that we're talking about where it was not two witnesses, but rather it was one witness. And a concession was made prior to the case that one witness would be acceptable. And now the question in the Mishnah is whether or not I can retract from such a concession. Rav Meir says you can, and the Chachamim say you cannot. The Gemara, as much as it defended the opinion of Reish Lakish and the answer of Reish Lakish, the Gemara, however, is bothered by the question of editing. Meaning that in order to say this pshat, so we needed to edit the Mishnah. The Mishnah said the word Edov, and we edited it to Edo. So the Gemara says, Hamiditani Reisha Dayano. V'seifa Edov Amadavka Ketani. Gemara says, look, if you're editing the Mishnah, really what you're saying is that there was a mistake that went into the Mishnah, that crept into the Mishnah. Now, I can understand mistakes creeping into the Mishnah if the Mishnah was written all in the plural, all in the singular. But you'll notice what happened in the Mishnah is that when it talked about judges, the Mishnah uses the words Dayano, right? The judge. When the Mishnah used the word Edim, the Mishnah said the word Edov in the plural. So in other words, the Mishnah shifted from going from singular to plural. I can easily understand, or better understand, that the Mishnah had a mistake creep into it if the Mishnah was consistently plural or the Mishnah was consistently singular. But by virtue of the fact that the Mishnah shifted from going from singular to plural, it meant that whoever authored and edited the Mishnah was very careful to make that shift. And it's really unlikely that the Mishnah actually has an editing mistake, if there was such a shift in the Mishnah. So, the Gemara, as much as it defended Reish Lakish, the Gemara seems to conclude that Reish Lakish's position is hard to defend, considering that what Reish Lakish is really arguing is that the Mishnah has a small mistake in it and it needs editing. And it's unlikely that our Mishnah is subject to a small little mistake. Amar Velazar, so here we go now with the second answer of the Gemara, second proposal, Babahu Ba'achel Aposlo. That what we're talking about when we're saying that one litigant is disqualifying the witnesses of the other litigant is that we're not talking about where it's the one litigant by himself, but it's the one litigant together with another witness. So in fact, you have now two witnesses testifying about the two witnesses. It happens to be that one of the two witnesses is the litigant himself, to which it prompts the Gemara to ask a really simple question. So the Gemara says this is what we would refer to in Halacha as Nogei Bedavar, meaning that if I'm testifying about something which is self-serving, so my testimony is going to be immediately rejected. And this is a very intuitive Halacha. Meaning the idea over here is that anytime I'm saying something that's self-serving, it obviously begs the credibility of my statement, considering the fact that I'm benefiting from that which I'm saying. And this is in Halacha referred to as Nogei Bedavar. In Lamdus, there's a basic question in terms of whether or not, if you're Nogei Bedavar, the reason why you're disqualified is because we're worried that you're lying. That's the way I just presented it a moment ago. Or it could be that in Lamdus, the way to understand it is that it's an objective psul. It's like a karov. It's like a relative testifying, which objectively is just unacceptable. Now, not for now, but on another occasion, when learning the Gemara more in depth, so you can speak out what would be a nafkamina, what would be differences in terms of how to understand it. But for our purposes right now, in terms of just understanding the Gemara on the simple level. So when you are saying something self-serving, so obviously you're not going to be believed. So the Gemara is wondering over here now, so I don't understand. So what do? We add another witness. So okay, good, we add another witness. But ultimately, when all is said and done, the litigant is one of the two witnesses testifying about the witnesses who are testifying against the litigant. Obviously, the litigant is no gebedaver. He says, and we should be worried that he's not telling the truth. So the Gemara now is suggesting, well, what they're doing is they're challenging the witnesses. The Gemara says challenging the witnesses in which way? So are they challenging the witnesses by accusing the witnesses of being thieves? So the Gemara says we're back to where we were just a moment ago, meaning that under those circumstances it's no gebedaver. In other words, he has obviously a self-serving cause in testifying about the witnesses who are looking to testify about him. So the Gemara says that no. The case over here is that not where the litigant is testifying about the witnesses, about the opposing witnesses, but rather what the litigant is testifying about is the family of the opposing witnesses. And so he's not speaking directly about the witness himself, he's speaking about his lineage. And he's saying that he's coming from a lineage in which can't testify. So, for example, says Rashi, let's say he's testifying that the opposing witnesses come from a family of Avadim. They're from slaves. Slaves cannot testify. We're going to be learning that in a couple of days from now. A slave cannot testify in a court of law. So he's saying that this person who's testifying against him is a descendant of a slave. So the Gemara says, Rab Meir savar hani amishpacha kamasadi v'yu mimei lakapaso. Rab Meir takes the position that, look, he's not testifying about the person himself per se. He's testifying about his family. Yes, it's true now that the witnesses are obviously going to be disqualified, but that's not direct. That's indirect. And so therefore, it would be fine according to Rav Meir to testify about the family. And Rabbanan Savri Sof Sof Nageba Dusahu. And the Chacham's position is no. We know the person's, we understand the person's motivation. He's testifying about the family. Obviously he's testifying about the family now. Right, it's a little curious that now he's deciding that it's a good time to testify about the other witness's family. He's testifying about the family now because right now the youngest member of the family, right, the most recent generation of this family, is testifying against him. So obviously now would be a very opportune time to testify about the family and tell everybody that the family is made up of Avadim, and therefore nobody from the family can testify, not including the person who's testifying about him right now. So the Chachamim say, obviously it's no gebedaver. Still, it's self-serving to make such a testimony, and we cannot simply separate the family that he's testifying about and the witness who's testifying about him right now as well. Okay, so that is now our second proposal of the Mishnah. So again, Rav Meir says that one litigant can testify and disqualify the witnesses of the other litigant. So far in the Gemara, we have two approaches. We have that of Reish Lakish and that of Rav Elazar. Reish Lakish says that we're talking about where it's not two witnesses, but rather it's one witness, and the concession was made before the case began. And according to Rav Elazar, we're talking about a case where there was where the testimony was not against the witness per se, but rather it was against the family of the witness. And the machlok between Rav Meir and the Chachamim is whether or not you consider nogeya b'davar under such a circumstance. We're going to go through now one more proposal of the Gemara, ki asa Rav Dimi am Rav Yochanan, where the Gemara quotes in the name of Rav Dimi, who's quoting in the name of Rav Yochanan. Rav Dimi constantly shuttled back and forth from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel, and always reported to the yeshivas in Bavel what is being taught and learned in the yeshivas in Eretz Yisrael. So now Rav Dimi is quoting Rav Yochanan, and he's saying that the case of our Mishnah is under the following circumstances. Machlokas b'shtei kitei edim. We're talking about where there are two sets of witnesses, meaning what happened was is that prior to the case, one of the litigants said that he is going to bring into the courtroom not one set of witnesses, but two set of witnesses. Now, obviously, in a court case, you don't need to bring two sets of witnesses. That's excessive. One set of witnesses would be sufficient. But it happens to be that the litigant claimed prior to the case that he has two sets of witnesses. He has four witnesses altogether. And now The question becomes the following. When you go into the courtroom and you tout how you have more evidence than you actually need, is it required now for you to present all the evidence as you said you were going to present? Or, even after you made such a claim, would it be sufficient for you to bring just the basic amount of evidence necessary? And the Gemara, the way the Gemara phrases this, this machlokus is tzarech levara or ein tzarech levara. Tzarech levara, the idea behind tzarech levara is that when I make a claim, tzarech levara, I have to clarify everything that I said, meaning that because I promoted my case as being an ironclad case with not just two but four witnesses. So if you subscribe to the position of Tzarech Levara, so that means that you have to produce actually four witnesses. Whereas if you subscribe to the position of Ein Tzarech Levara, it means that even though you touted that you have the best case and you have not two, you have four witnesses, you have eight witnesses, the only thing you need to do once the case actually begins is just bring the requisite number of witnesses necessary in order for the case to work, meaning two. But you don't have to bring more than two, even though you touted more than that. So the Gemara now is suggesting that the machlokes between Rameir and the Chachamim is based on this question of whether or not Tzarech Levara ain't Tzarech Levara. Now, what I'll do now is I'll read the Gemara, and I'll read the Gemara like we have it inside, and like Rashi first presents it. So, okay, and point out that the difficulty in this pshat. So the Gemara says, but let's say the Gemara as we have it on our page. Rameir is of the opinion that you do have to clarify, and Rabbanan Sarvei Ein Tzarech Levara, and the Chachamim say that you do not have to clarify. And what's meant by that explains Rashi as follows: that according to Rameir, who says Tzarech Levara that you have to clarify, that means that if you said you have to bring four witnesses, you have to bring four witnesses. If you do not bring four witnesses, so then the case is going to be dismissed based on the simple fact that you did not do what you said you were going to do. So that means like now as follows, that you bring the first two witnesses, and now the litigant, the opposing litigant looks at these two witnesses and say, oh, I know what? I know they're not good. And so he, together with somebody else now, is going to try to disqualify these first set of witnesses. So according to Reb Meir, that'd be fine. Why? Because you said you were going to bring a second set of witnesses, and because you said you were going to bring a second set of witnesses, now you have to bring a second set of witnesses. And your failure to bring a second set of witnesses is going to disqualify the whole case altogether. So by virtue of the fact that you said you're going to bring a second set of witnesses, meaning that you're going to have to bring a second set of witnesses, so therefore it allows for the litigant to disqualify the first set of witnesses. Now, what about the fact that you said you're going to bring two sets of witnesses, and now the first set are disqualified? So the way Rashi understands the Gemara over here, that's not the end of the world, because you said you're going to bring four witnesses, and you did. It happened to have been that the first set of witnesses are disqualified. That's not your fault. You didn't know they were going to be disqualified. You thought they were going to testify. You thought that their testimony was going to be good. So did you do what you said you were going to do? Yeah, you brought in four witnesses. But at least now it allows for the litigant to disqualify the first set of witnesses because you know that a second set of witnesses are going to come. That is Reb Meir. Whereas according to the Chachamim, Chachamim will tell you that no, that there's no need to bring in all the witnesses that you said you're going to bring in. So even though you said you're going to bring in four witnesses, you don't have to. And that means then that after the first set of witnesses, if the litigant wants to, we could stop right there. So for the other litigant now to disqualify these first set of witnesses may in fact overturn the whole case. And that obviously is self-serving. So this would be considered no gei b'davar. Okay, so this is the way Rashi proposes the Gemara as we have it over here. Rashi points out the obvious difficulty with this pshat is that now it comes out that if I brought in four witnesses and it turns out that the first two are disqualified, so that is considered as if I did what I said I was going to do. That obviously is difficult because when all said and done, I didn't. Meaning I said I was going to bring in four witnesses, and it turns out that the first two were disqualified, and I didn't really bring in four kosher witnesses. But anyway, that is the way Rashi presents the Gemara. For our purposes right now, we'll leave it at this, although look in Rashi where Rashi presents the Gemara in the opposite manner. In the meantime, however, back to our Gemara. So the Gemara says that this is a third way now to explain a Gemara. So, but if we only have one set of witnesses, and the litigant said he was only going to bring one set of witnesses, so of course even Ramer would agree that you cannot disqualify the one set of witness. What if you only have one set of witnesses? So the Gemara says, what are you talking about? We just got done saying that if it's only one set of witnesses, so you can't disqualify the one set of witnesses. So Ella Nimses Kashniya Krovim Upsulamahu. The Gemara says, no, you misunderstood. What I meant is as follows. Let's say that I touted that I was going to bring in two sets of witnesses. And we subscribe to the rule of Sarach Levara, which means now that I have to bring in both set of witnesses. And let's say after bringing the first set of witnesses, the other litigant can disqualify them, which according to Ramer, you can do that, because he knows that I'm going to bring in a second set of witnesses. And then it turns out that the second set of witnesses ended up becoming disqualified. And now it turns out that I needed the first set of witnesses. Are we going to retroactively disallow the litigant's disqualification? Consider now that at the time when they were testifying, there was another set of witnesses that were ready to testify. So we said that if you subscribe to Sarach Levar, which Ramer does, so we said that it would be okay, because we know that the second set of witnesses are coming. But now that the second set of witnesses have come, and they turned out to be no good, can we now look back and say retroactively that at the time when the litigant disqualified the first set of witnesses, turns out that we now need their testimony. And so maybe retroactively we can call this a case of Nogei B'Davar. So Amar Lahem Kvar Ha'idu Eidim Rishonim, the Gemara says it's too late. Meaning once the first witnesses have testified, so now they testified. And Ikeda Amar, the Gemara has another version which basically says the same thing. Amar Rav Ashi Kvar Ha'idu Eidim Rishonim. So the first witnesses have already testified. Which the way Rashi describes it and explains it, it means to say that the first witness has already testified, and at the time of disqualification, we thought that there were another set of witnesses coming. Therefore, it was not Nogei B'Davar, and we're not going to retroactively describe this as being a Nogei B'Davar. And so, therefore, the case is concluded, and there are no witnesses testifying. Okay, so let's quickly recap. In the Mishnah, we discussed scenarios in which we're going to be constructing a court for a monetary case. The Mishnah opens up with that you need three for a monetary case, and then the Mishnah goes into the process of Zavla, Zebra Lo Echad, selection of a court. In the Mishnah, we have three machloksim between Ramer and the Chachamim, one regarding the selection of the third judge, two regarding the disqualification of the judge, and three regarding the disqualification of the witnesses. After a little discussion in the Gemara concludes that what we're talking about is not the selection of courts, but rather the selection of judges, meaning that each one selects a judge, and then a third judge is selected. What is the purpose of doing that? So the Gemara's response was, Yatsa din la mito, that by doing so we're going to have a more honest judgment. Exactly what that meant, what that means. So we discussed in our Gemara two possible pshatim, Rashi and Tosos. Rashi says it has to do with the perception. It will be perceived as better judgment. According to Tosos, it actually may result in more truth-seeking and a more honest ruling and a more honest judgment. The Gemara discussed today not participating in a court or signing on documents or even in a suuda unless you know who else is going to be together with you. The Gemara then discussed the positions of Ramer in terms of disqualifying judges and disqualifying witnesses. Two positions of Ramer which is hard to understand in terms of disqualifying judges. The Gemara concluded that if it's a mumche, if it's someone who is certified and has smicha, then even Ramer says he can't disqualify him. He can only disqualify him if he's not a mumche. And the Chachamim disagree with that. And as far as disqualifying of witnesses is concerned, that's a really difficult position of Ramer. How can Ramer allow for the disqualification of witnesses? And the Gemara proposed, so far we saw in today's daf, three different answers to this question of how you can disqualify witnesses. Either one we're talking about where it was one witness and a concession was made before the case started between the two litigants. Second proposal of the Gemara is that we're talking about where the disqualification was not about the witness per se, but about his family. And do we view that as directly attacking the witness himself. And the third way is the question of Tzarech Levarer, where the case in the Mishnah is talking about where the litigant touted that he has not two witnesses, but rather four witnesses. And if you subscribe to Tzarech Levarer, all four witnesses have to be brought in. And therefore, when the first two witnesses are brought in, can the opposing litigant at this point in time disqualify the first two witnesses? If you subscribe to Tzarech Levarer, so then the answer would be yes. Again, that's according to Rashi's first explanation of the Gemara. We didn't go through Rashi's second explanation of the Gemara.